you like conversation on a variety of topics? Feel like no one wants to talk about the things that interest you? Tired of only hearing the same political, sports, or catastrophe talk? Yeah, we feel that way too. Join two high-functioning geeks as they discuss just about anything under the sun. We can't tell you what we'll be talking about each week because we don't know where our brains will take us. It will be an interesting conversation, though, so hang on and join us. Here comes the Relentless Geekery.
So redo. We had a whatever, gremlins in the system. It happens.
Another thing I want to do is I'm going to turn my night shift on my monitor because that warms the color coming off my monitor. Look at how much better I
look.
See, so, exactly. So, well, it's funny, you know, every time we tweak it and then you see, well, do you like that better or not? It's This is interesting. I was noticing on a Zoom session that when I wrinkle my forehead, I really can see my forehead wrinkles more on camera than I notice in my real life. So, anyway.
Well, vanity. You can also do a Zoom. They'll touch it up. It does digital processing.
I have that turned on, and apparently my forehead wrinkles are enough to defeat even that algorithm, you know.
Right.
So, Remember I told you the story of when I was on camera for Fox News in the morning, and I was so shiny that they couldn't even just powder me. They're like, sir, we're going to have to seal your head. It's like, wait, what? What? So they really put on some kind of like makeup shellac.
Wow.
So that I would stop sweating through whatever they were using on me. Anyway.
It's like a cone head.
Like that. Exactly. They buffed me up. You know, they got somebody with a special shiny cloth right on the forehead, you know.
Well, you know, this wasn't on our original show, but speaking of Doctor Who, I heard that Whitaker is leaving and they're bringing on a new doctor. And now this is just rumor at the moment, but supposedly it's going to be another woman and she's like 80 years old.
Wow, that's going back to the very first. You know, the very first Doctor Who was kind of like the grandfather that you leave your daughter with, and then they get into adventures.
Well, that was exactly what it was, the
exactly.
grandfather.
Yeah. How interesting that they would do the full, like, retro loop in time, if you will. You know what I mean? So, wow, who would that be? I think it's going to be like Helen Mirren? You know what I mean? Who's
that would be such a great choice.
Dame Judi Dench? It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I thought her too.
There's all kinds of, like, giants of British stage and screen that probably always wanted to play Doctor Who and kind of never thought, because it's Dr. Male Doctor Who, that they'd never get a chance, you know? So, very interesting.
So, you're buzzing again. It's like, try a reboot. Yeah, I mean...
Honestly, I installed a new battery in my Mac laptop, and now I'm getting simultaneous reboots. And it's weird because nothing ever goes wrong. Everything is plug and play in the Mac world, except this really is an internal. And it's one of those things, my machine's 5 years old, so I don't mind violating the warranty. And I was very careful and didn't shock it and all that kind of stuff. And yet, like, okay, now I got to open it up again. Like, did I seat the power connector fully? And of course, when you look at it online, then you start to say, oh, you got to reset your system control chip, your NVRAM, you know, they have ways of that it might not have acknowledged your new battery, that it thinks it still has the old one, but it's not matching, if you will.
Right.
And when I got the battery installation instructions, it was just like, nope, pop it in, you'll be okay. And I would rather that it said, kind of like, here's how to do the cleaning. Here's how to do the real full reboot, restart new battery type thing so that you don't bump into this and then have to troubleshoot it. Even if it's more steps, I'd rather know that it's idiot proofed truly.
Right.
you know what I mean?
Well, but you know, I think honestly, the technology has gotten to the point where it is, you know, less extra manual work. Because like cars, you know, the new cars back in the day when we were first driving the dinosaur cars and you would have to take it in for maintenance. You'd have to change your spark plugs. They would change wires. They would, you know, check all of this and little things here and there. Now they're like, well, we hooked up the computer. It's all good. They don't change anything.
That's right. Well, another thing. So what spoils you is I have things not only in cars now have it that things just work, but they also have like things that self-diagnose 10,000 times a second. And so the minute that you have low tire pressure or a battery anomaly or something like that, it'll tell you right on your little road computer, you know, in your screen.
Yeah.
So I kind of expect that battery technology is such now that instead of having to worry about necessarily crystallization and setting your maximum power lower than it was when you first installed it, it has chips associated with the battery that are continually doing, hey, if you leave it on overnight on a trickle charge, that doesn't wreck your battery like it used to in the NiCad days. It manages the power. So I kind of imagine that that's what any new battery does, is it doesn't just manage the power. It would chime in and say, hey, I've got a tenuous connection. Pop your machine back open. I would have thought that it would have given me the first clue as to what was wrong, not just, I don't know what to do, so I'm going to reboot your machine. Wait, what?
Right.
So, that seems kind of drastic.
Right. Yeah, it goes back to the, well, you can't really change anything. You can't adjust anything. So it either works or it doesn't.
And I don't know, long ago, back in the days of VCRs, it got to where it cost more to get it repaired than to just buy a new one. That was their way, I guess, of building planned obsolescence in and say that if you have a VCR long enough that it actually starts to get dirty heads, they might have a head cleaner. But if there's anything wrong with it component-wise, they don't want to have a repair function. They don't want to have the shipping and the hassle and that kind of stuff. It's just, hey, by now technology has advanced. So it's not just that you're replacing it, you're actually bettering it.
Right.
And we want $300 more of you. You know what I mean? And I kind of get that. Because I hold on to technology for a long time, I often am like, well, I'm not just getting the newest feature, I'm actually getting like the last three newest features. And so it's kind of, things are really amazing and cool and new because I have this accumulation of advances that they've made. I have an Apple Watch 1 and it's up to 6. And now it does, where it's actually able to tell you about your, not just your heart rate, but your blood sugar and stuff like that.
By EKG and oxygen EKG sensor.
Exactly. And honestly, I'm going to get one because now that I've had atrial fibrillation and, pre-diabetes and stuff, I want things to help me monitor without sticking my finger or any of those kinds of things.
Right.
And I don't know, why not be in on the latest miracle for like $300, $600, $1,000? That's not nothing. And yet, wow, the benefits of that. I'm surprised I've dragged my feet so long on that because they've had, and maybe I guess the health things are what really matter to me nowadays. Back when it was, hey, slightly better camera, slightly better GPS. It's like, I look at my pictures and they look really sweet. I don't know that I need to get better.
My eyes are going, so it looks fine.
Exactly. That's true. While my personal system is in retreat, I don't need more proof that my eyesight is going. So.
Well, how much are the new Apple Watches? Because I remember, it wasn't like the very first one, like $10,000 or something.
Actually, they weren't like the first. If you want, they had multiple tiers. So if you really wanted not only the watch, but the Rolex version of it, where people would go ooh and ah,
the George Jetson airplane on it.
Exactly. I think mine was $600, and I think now they're $300. As you've laughed about, you get more for less all the time in technology. You can get Apple is very aware that their computers are not only the capability it supplies you with, but the love factor. People just like how it looks, they like how it feels, and a watch is a very personal statement.
Yeah.
So they have all kinds of upgradable wristbands and stuff like that, where if I wanted to get titanium or gold or whatever like that, but I'm kind of okay with it just being black. And what I want is the capability. I really want the consumer. I want the functions of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And well, we've got Fitbit and they're about the same price, and they just upgraded with not only Google Assistant, but Alexa Assistant. So you can choose either one, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And the great thing about the Apple, and I love this about Apple, they're built a little better and sturdy, and they aren't built to fail after 6 months. I've had an iPad with a cracked screen for like 7 years now. And we just saw a video of some guy that was taking shots with his iPhone out a plane window, like 2,000 feet up, and dropped it. And it fell 2,000 feet, recorded the whole way down, and hit the ground and kept recording. And he's still using it. He found it. So
I'm surprised that that's not like the advertisement you see every day for Apple.
Said.
Exactly. Here's this, iPad being mauled by a bear. And yet, Timex wise, it keeps on ticking.
Right.
You know what I mean? Wow.
It was pretty amazing. You can look it up on YouTube. It's pretty cool because he's just sitting there filming and the wind catches it and it just whoop right out of his hand. He's like, oh, man. And then they showed the video from the phone. It's just tumbling. in the air. And it's like, yeah, really, really. And then he found it. It's like in Italy. And the part that cracked me up, he's in Italy, and there's the guy that helped him find it is wearing a Celtics jersey. So it just made me laugh.
That's very good. Apple has always had features where it doesn't just work. It actually, they try for delight. And so right. One of the things your Apple Watch does is it's not only that it's good to like a certain depth where in water. So you actually could go swimming with it and stuff like that. It actually, if you even just get it any kind of wet, like from hiking around and getting sweaty, it has a water purge mode. You hit, this guy three times and it actually like pushes water out of it, whatever it might have that's even on the verge of getting in. And so it's kind of like, okay, now the technology is becoming self-defensive. And I'm not sure that's a good thing. You know what I mean? Wow. I tried to kill it by dropping it on a plane, and no, it failed. 2 weeks later, it shows up on my doorstep. What? Must kill you. You know,
whatever case he had on, he had some light clear case on it. It wasn't an OtterBox or anything, but I'm like, man, that case manufacturer had better be calling this guy and saying, we want to buy that video.
Exactly. You know, there's a data recovery service that has often been able to, like, even if your Mac, your computer has been in a fire in your house, has been like thrown into a volcano, whatever else it might be, we got stuff off this drive. And they had one like that where it not only fell into the water, it fell like into the ocean, was down like in a wreck, like they got it off the Titanic or something like that. And yet they were able to retrieve like 85% of the data. And honestly, this thing looked like it had barnacles on it. It had been there for a while, not just it went in and they immediately got it. So it's kind of cool that they sometimes, when you see things that have like, 100,000 rewrite cycles, or that they're built to last, that they're really sealed. It's really kind of true. They didn't just build this, as you just said, to wear out in 6 months, but they kind of said, we need to have military grade stuff versus if this is going to be used to hold the codes in a rocket silo, it can't fail because someone bumped it when they were sitting down at their desk or something like that.
You know what I mean? I don't know. Did you read the book, The Martian?
Yes.
Okay. The one part in it where they're trying to send the supplies and they miscalculate something and the high forces like push it to the back and all the food like liquefies and then it changes and then the rocket blows up. I'm like, wow, you don't think of that as a normal person driving a car at 60, but I mean, this extreme speeds, extreme pressures, what it can really do. I'm like, wow, that was eye-opening for me reading that part.
In fact, it's kind of funny you would say that. I'm reading a book called Neptune's Brood by Charles Stross. He's consistently one of those authors that he throws so many great ideas into a book that I have to get hold the book away from me and go, wow, that's smart. That's so creative. That's so much like the extrapolation of what we got now, but in a way that it's really brilliant or it's really uncomfortable, or he's just an idea fountain. And so I kind of have to read one of his books when I'm ready. I have to up my game and really pay attention and get, this is how the world of space travel is going to become. It's like in this one, for instance, everything is what has become valuable is time. Like, when you take a journey, you're not so much paying dollars as you are paying the time debt of what it takes to get you from here to there. And that everything people have given up on the royal standard of hours, minutes, seconds, maybe it's down to seconds, something that they can have that little cesium resonator that tells you exactly what a second is.
Apple Watch 10.
Something like that. Really? Maybe that's it. But just they're fascinating because it isn't just he throws this out there. It's throughout the book that the whole society has adjusted to this standard. And you kind of have to get used to the new vocabulary, like reading Dune, all kinds of things in the glossary that you had to understand in order to really get to the tale. And his books are like that. And so like Earthlings are called the fragile, because after you had enhancements, where they're either cyborged or they're genetically engineered and they're all these different environments that we now know about from space travel, you have to be able to breathe methane or whatever else it might be, that us little Earthlings, where we have to have this exact class M planet and it has to be within a certain temperate zone, all kinds of stuff, we really are not an adaptive species besides our little world. And so all these other creatures that have been kind of like, in the replicants in Blade Runner, they're they're made to be able to handle Jupiter, you know, the incredible gravity of Jupiter, and that we are like tissue paper compared to them.
Yeah.
And, but they're still that we have some spark, you know, creativity, whatever that they don't have. And so we're still valuable, but we're valuable like a Fabergé egg that they have to carry around instead of being a robust leader of the species, you know, it's kind of cool.
In that future, what you, what was his name? You said Jeff or John Strauss?
Charles Strauss.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. So in his future with that, then that's what OtterBox will be doing. They'll be building cases for the people.
Exactly. You know, like your exoskeleton that preserves, right, you know, little pink envelope you from being battered about by cosmic radiation, right, by G-forces and whatever else it might be.
So there's going to be some guy working for OtterBox going, oh my God, why didn't we think of that? And he's calling his military contacts. Yeah, we have an idea.
Well, as you know, I've seen wonderful lists where they say, here's all the things that exist today because someone saw something on Star Trek and said, you know, when the material science, right, when the tech, when the communications are available, you really should be able to like touch your chest and go computer. And we're getting to that.
We're close.
We're always connected and we have replicators. We have fabricants that can like, you know, yeah, Earl Grey hot. You know what I mean? And it really, I love that someone takes on the challenge of saying, you know, they were very prescient in that show, not only about the big things, but about the small things. How are you going to design the uniforms? How are you going to make food? All of that. And that we say, wow, when we can finally do that, it'll really be cool to have a tricorder where you don't have to do anything invasive. Well, you just kind of pass it over someone.
How close are you with the Apple Watch? I mean,
that's what I'm saying. And I've always liked the idea of wearable technology, not from Star Trek, but there's been other series, great books, like the Deathstalker books, if I remember right, which, what a great crazy name for a great series, a real space opera. But they had things of all the augmentations that you're going to have. It won't have to only be cyborgy where you're committed to it forever. You really should be able to put on your battle wear and your loving wear and your scholar wear and whatever else, and that it just like it enhances your senses or your strength or whatever, and easily, not totally personalized. There's benefit to personalization because then you can really, you know, that person's adrenal levels or whatever. So I just love where they not only do it, but they actually talk it, like get out into the nits and grits of it. And then an inventor is going to say, that's exactly right. All people's eyes aren't the same. I'd have to account for the fact that we already have to have different glasses. Everybody has a different prescription and we'll have to standardize the set of things so that it's not like perfection at a customized way is very expensive, but if you can get to where there's just different bands of acceptability, then you can start to commoditize things. And they talk about that, you know. So nowadays you can go and buy reading glasses at Costco for like $10, not get a $200 pair of glasses as a prescription. I don't know. I love that the future is coming, and it's
even better
coming.
Even better. I've got the kids all tease me. They call it my cybernetic cornea implants because I had
LASIK maybe or something.
I had LASIK, but the clouding. What's it called? Totally blank.
Yeah, cataracts.
Yes, cataracts. Yeah. Jeez, okay, oh man, the okay, simple words. I had cataracts, so they basically cut my cornea out and put precision designed corneas back in, and did LASIK, so I can see better than I've ever seen in my life. And so they couldn't do that years and years ago. So what's the next step, where they could have auto adjusting corneas, where you don't need the LASIKs on top of it, where the corneas work, you know, with your pupils and stuff, just like real corneas and that. So
exactly. You know, I think I mentioned I've been to a number of futurist conferences, and one of the things that I always ask as a question from the audience, a lot of what they do is, here's how we're going to be able to get someone who's been deaf finally to hear, or someone who's blind to finally see. And I kind of look at it also from the extrapolation of that. So what if you have someone that has reasonable vision now, but they want to be able to see 21, not 2020.
Right.
And can you, what, you know, this isn't only just the catch up, it's also the enhancement. And that's when people start to get a little bit spooked, medical ethics wise, of are we really going to be able to have people create their superior self, and what should it cost, and should everybody have access to it, and stuff like that. But to not do it because you're worried is a silly thing. You should be able to at least experiment with it and see how well it works. And you know what I mean? Kind of gear up for, is this something you could roll out? Because I don't know, if you're making your enhanced cornea out of, you know, sand, silicon, you know, or whatever, you know, I mean, clear glass, it sure seems that It's just a matter of the engineering that makes it beautiful, but the materials aren't like you're going to need vanadium. You're going to need some rare earth metal. That goes all the way back to stem cell discussions and stuff like that, as you know. You know, nowadays we really are curing more and more diseases from genetic things. In fact, I think the mRNA vaccines that we have, you know, that we're about to fight COVID-45 with, they're not based on finding a version of COVID and having it in the lab and defeating it. It's more, what is its a map look like? We diagnosed it by making up the data about it, not making up finding the data about it. And then we kind of all did it as a computer simulation. We didn't have to go through the 5 years of testing, right? Because in the computer, you can do all the wind tunnel testing in a millionth of the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's fascinating to me. And indeed, I can see how it could, you know, everything can be used, the powers for good or the powers for evil. It sure seems like curing a deadly disease is a good use of, you know, CRISPR technology or whatever. And that's not what was used here, but you know what I'm trying to say.
I was going to mention CRISPR with that, with the eyes, the cataracts. I actually asked the doctor about that. They won't give you better than normal vision unless there's a specific reason. And I said, well, what would that be? They said, well, like if you're a career secret service agent and you want to shoot better, they'll give you like 25/20 or 30/20. But if you're just a hunter that wants to shoot turkeys, they won't. If you're a doctor,
you can't even buy it. There is some ethics that kick in, or some government control that says,
at least in our country.
And there is that too. You know what I mean? For anybody that you don't have to have necessarily mad scientists, you just have to have that some people don't think of the body as a temple. They think of the body as a lab,
right?
And that they want to see what happens when you can we make bunnies glow? You know what I mean? By giving them some whatever. Remember, isn't that like a, you know, sea urchin or jellyfish DNA? And then you got bright green bunnies. So I can think of all kinds of ways that I'd love to have my parts stay good longer and be able to do more. I'd love to be able to hear with great separation. I'd love to be able to see further. All my senses expanded. I guess it'd be like Daredevil. You'd have to learn how to handle it. You know what I mean? Because it could be the overwhelm of, well, now I can hear every conversation in the city. And funny, 90% of them are utter crap. You know what I mean? They're vapid nothing. So, anyway,
Isn't it every like cyberpunk novel that's exactly what happens? You go to the slicers underground and the doctors that are underground to get these enhancements. And
that's right.
You know, it's real life now. And you mentioned that the glowing and stuff. There was a great Michael Crichton story that talked about that a little bit, where these people, you know, the sea turtles, people every year try and help make sure the baby sea turtles make it out, blah, blah, blah. Well, they were kind of doing that. And they were like looking because the shells on the sea turtles were glowing, and they were showing advertisements like Coca-Cola and BP oil. So the companies were buying genes and technology to put into the animals so that on the beach, you would see their advertisements right on the shells of the turtles.
That's amazing and disturbing.
Thanks to Michael Crichton.
It's funny. You don't have to have just speculation about how it could go bad. You know, Monsanto is one of those companies that, as they started trying to corner the seed market, like make genetically altered seed that did good things, right? Golden rice, you know, that includes iodine and various other things that have a resistance to Roundup, so that you could use Roundup without it itself getting poisonous or infected or whatever the term might be. But then they started to include not only the benefits, but saying, now that we own this, this is our genetic markers that are in it. Anywhere that our seed blows into your fields, we owned that corn on an intellectual property basis. And they started to push on that they were, you know, we're not going to sell you seed that germinates each year.
Yep, it's a you have one-time to buy it use from thing. Us.
And so Africa, all of a sudden, is every crop is a yearly addiction on the part of Monsanto, instead of having nothing. Is there anything more natural than, you know, that's how civilization started. We put down roots. We started to raise corn, wheat, barley, rice, whatever, and had a regular food source. And now someone's going to corner the market on bread, corner the market on water, whatever. I mean, there's a really insidious, like, wow, that's like James Bond master villain stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can't let that happen.
Well, and right along with that, I think that was explored in that same Michael Crichton book. And along with that was exploring some of the things, like when you go in to get blood work, or if you have a disease and they're doing tissue tests and blah, 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 biopsies and stuff, that you sign all these papers and essentially you don't own anything. So what was happening was they discovered this person with a gene that they needed for this breakthrough, whatever. Well, because he had signed paperwork when he had his blood work done, they basically owned him. They were able to legally go at any time and get blood from him, use that blood to make their medicine and make billions of dollars without paying him a single penny. He could be in the supermarket and legally they could walk in and just grab him and drag him to the lab to take blood, because it was explored in the way the laws were in the book. And it's that's really scary to think about.
Exactly. Now you're just like a blood sack waiting to be tapped into, you know. I know there's a great book called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. I think that's it, where Saint was similar, but not as terrible. She was someone that had given gene samples, you know, had taken skin samples and so forth. And they discovered that hers was very, very useful, you know, not in the way of a specific cure for anything, but if I remember correctly, in a way that it was a perfect standard human being. And so by making multiple recreated samples of her, they could test it against all different kinds of diseases and say, this will apply to 90% of humanity. Well, the Lacks family has gotten no benefit from all the fact that she has proven to be the perfect white mouse of humanity. You know what I mean? That she's easily replicated, so much, so useful, that kind of stuff. And they talk about those issues of who really owns what,
right.
And you don't always know what you're signing. And that, I don't know, places that, and to, you would think that the companies would say, wow, if we've got this much money, we really could like throw some back to the source of all this wealth. But instead, they're so worried about a fraying of their intellectual property and so forth that if anything, they fight it even more to say, oh no, we owe nothing to her. And it just seems so that the legal system has made people not just have a standard of grace, of gratefulness for something that really is a miraculously good thing, because otherwise, you might have to be forced to be good instead of choosing to be good.
Yeah.
And what a terrible way of thinking about it, but that's just how it is for a number of things, you know? So
that's a whole long topic it's in multiple ways. It's scary. You know, the things that, and again, some of the science fiction, like the Michael Crichton stuff, it's like so true. It's, you know,
very good at the extrapolation of just not 100 years from now, but like 5 years from now, if people were just too greedy or too adventuresome. You know, Jurassic Park is all about, let's just see what happens and taking off safeguards where maybe there should be and stuff like that, you know? So,
yeah. And I mean, he's one of my favorite authors. Prey is another one about artificial intelligence. And Next is the one I was talking about with the blood and the average. And, but Jurassic Park was the first one I read of his. And I'm like, oh my, it was one of those books that hit me and I couldn't put it down and has stayed as one of my top books of all time to this day. You know,
It's the most common criticism that I read of him was that his characters are kind of like cut out, you know, wooden and stuff like that. It was like, wow, this guy has such great ideas that I don't mind them just being actors in a play and
right.
get to the meat of it, which is what would happen if we really recreated dinosaurs or I just had the ability to manipulate genetics at that level.
Have they ever read Stephen King? He has like 10 characters. He just puts them all in different books.
It's, you know, I wonder what it is about, instead of being like, I've read in maybe mostly business books where it says the wise way to be you as a person or run your business is not to say, okay, this guy's 90% good. Let's focus on the 10% that he doesn't have and just like pound him on that. It's more like, why don't you let this genius run? Why don't you take the things that he can do that nobody else can do and really focus on that? And so there's, you know, a book like kind of about, you know, managing your stars, managing your mentions, about you need to get out of their way. You need to stop thinking that it's about having a single standard and making everybody forced into that standard, but being able to recognize when people can do extraordinary things and create the environment where they not only enjoy themselves, they don't want to leave. They want to do what they're doing. Right. They share with you and that kind of stuff. And the world has people at each end of that spectrum. You know, my biggest problem as a consultant was when I went into a company that was very much about one size has to fit all. And my, know, continually having to remind them, the reason that you brought me in was because you kind of couldn't solve this problem. You need to give me the tech I need and the access to data and whatever else. Get your money's worth out of me. I'm an expensive resource. So let me do this. Don't get in my way now. Don't. And if anything, the reason that I'm not an employee, the reason that I am a consultant is because I don't want to be graded, you know, 1 to 100, A to F. I want to be graded pass fail. If I do the good thing for you, then you bring me back on another project. You know what I mean? Right. It isn't a matter of, well, I got to go through a 360 review and somebody doesn't like me because I gave them a naughty look in the cafeteria. It's like, what are you talking about? That's not what I'm here to do.
I saved the company $100,000 in the last month. Yes. You know,
that's often when I wrote my proposals and, you know, and contracts and stuff, it wasn't anything. It was all about, this thing is going to cost your company $750,000, but I can do it for $200K. And so it's not about you're paying me a lot of money. It's look at the money you're saving because the business reality. And that's become a very big thing for me is, you know, that's how I do proposals is not only what is it worth, but Pete Rick had a very good thing. Maybe it was even Arthur Anderson, now that I think back, called IRACUS. It was increased revenue, avoided cost, improved service. And that you should think about those three factors whenever you're doing something and try to get a number to it. The only way you know if you've won the game is if you can say, you know, how do you keep score? When do you know you've done enough? And when do you declare phase two now? Because we made our phase one objectives and all that kind of stuff. And it sounds a little bit clinical, I guess, if you apply that to life, but not really. There's all kinds of things within speaking, within Mensa, within whatever else it might be that I want it to be that we don't just do an advertising campaign and hope it worked. Mm-hmm. You got to build in some feedback loop that says, how do we know how many people were reached and how many know did we get a reaction out of them and was it a good reaction? And you just, data rules. Data is what gives you the ability to know how to improve your process, how if you did a good job. And I don't know, I do that to myself. You know, if I'm thinking about what I'm going to do, what are my options? I only have 24 hours in a day. How do I triage this so that I like the use of my time? And then also, if you get everything done, really done, then you can say, I can do all the goofing off that I want now because I don't have to worry about what do I owe to myself, the world, you know, people in general. I really have bought my free time because I fulfilled all my obligations and saved money and improved the house and whatever else.
What I've actually been doing a bit is scheduling what free time activities I want to do, because like you, there's a lot of things I like to do and I will go weeks or months and I'm like, you know what? I haven't played guitar or I haven't played on the keyboard and stuff. It's Christmas. I brought it out because I wanted to play Christmas carols. And last year I didn't at all. Yeah. So I like actually have to almost schedule myself like, okay, you're going to go play piano. And it's like a to-do task. And it sounds weird. It's like, well, now I'm forced to do it. I'm ordering, you know, that's too structured and stuff. But I relax and enjoy it. And I feel better because I did all the things I wanted to do rather than, well, I watched this movie I really didn't care for.
I hear you, you know, boy, there was a time before melanoma, let's say, when I really did work all the time. I really kept thinking, you know, when I was offered consulting engagements when I lived in Chicago, it was always, okay, another miracle that I can do and people will pay me handsomely for it. And if I end up working 2,500 hours a year instead of 2,000, it's because, you know, I'm at the height of my powers and of my wage earning capability. And so let's do this while I can. You know, it's kind of like as if you were an Olympic athlete or a great tennis player, you know, you're going to like hit your 40s and your body's going to lose the step. So do all your miraculous stuff while you're still equipped to do so.
Right.
And having said that, I really did used to do that when I realized, wow, I'm only working. You know what I mean? I'm like fitting in Christmas shopping on December 23rd because I kept pulling it off. And your health suffers because you're not like taking your walks or you're always eating crappy fast food at 9 o'clock at night because you didn't build in reasonable lunch and dinner. You didn't give yourself a break. I really had to learn to not do that because as I mentioned also, my flow state that I so love, it really can be absorbing and addictive, and you fall into it and you come out of it like kind of come to, and then wow, when you come to at 9 o'clock at night because you really were hyper productive, but then you go, oh, didn't I want to like go catch Twin Peaks?
Right.
I just coded all the way through a show that I really like. I really should have made a plan to not have that lost, you know, back when it wasn't, you couldn't just
watch anything at any time.
Yes, exactly. It really was a loss if you didn't catch a Sunday night movie on Sunday night.
Arguably for that or music or anything with the kids, they don't appreciate it as much as we did. When that new album would come out and you'd go get that new album and put it on the record player for the first time, there was an experience. Now, you know.
Yeah, everything is available all the time. It means that nothing is really that important to do right now or whatever else it might be. Maybe
so, that's the counterpart of it. I just wonder when they reach our age, what they'll like realize that they haven't done, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. It is. Things are changing. And what's their response to that? How are they going to manage their time, their life? You know, do they have a sense of time is scarce until, I don't know. I should talk more with the youth. And say, so how are you handling COVID? How are you handling life in general in this world of constant availability and things like that?
Based on my kids, we're hitting the age of like, wow, I want to play more music. I miss doing that. I want to go do hikes or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think they might actually have the opposite, similar but opposite, where they're like, wow, I can't believe I really wanted to watch that much YouTube videos and all these silly things. And, you know, it's that same realization, just kind of the opposite end of that.
Yeah. I know that a lot of what I've ended up doing is, you know, you look at, okay, I get prompted by Netflix saying this is only around until 1:15, you know, 21.
Yeah, so I better watch it.
Cheers, and it's 300 episodes. And so it's like, well, am I really going to fit in? And some things I really regret. I wasn't aware that the West Wing was going away until quickly. And then there was also like 150 episodes of that, 120, whatever else it might be. And I just kind of made that, darn it, I missed my shot, but I'm not going to watch 120 hours of this over the next 4 weeks.
Right, because then you don't enjoy it either.
It's 30 hours a week of the job, and you don't enjoy it. It feels like you're doing it out of obligation or out of, you know, now there's a limited artificial scarcity to it. And I've had to make that choice for any number of big series where it's like one day I was going to watch all those. And now, even though they're kind of available, when it was available, I didn't. And now it's going away. And I guess I just have to acknowledge it's going away kind of forever. I'm never going to watch that. You know what I mean? So that childhood dream of watching and having said that, it's also kind of cool to say, wow, there really are many, many X-Files. And yet I worked my way through every X-Files episodes, not even when they were streaming, but when they were on disc, by just getting disc after disc after disc. And I just wanted to be able to say, I watched everyone. I watched the mythology develop. I watched the recurring characters. It really was very well structured. Chris Carter did a really good job of having it be that season six still had payoffs and betterment instead of it being, oh, they junked the shark and now it's just kind of going through the motions. You know what I mean? So what a great expression that is. Isn't that another one of those that didn't exist until recently, but now everybody uses jump the shark.
It the Fonz?
Yes, exactly that. When he tried to jump his motorcycle over on Happy Days.
Like Evel Knievel.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that someone, I think I mentioned this, you know, I'm going to a class about fire sign theater, a virtual class. Uh-huh. And they just had, someone said the Department of Redundancy Department. And that was the first time anybody ever said that. Now everybody uses that.
Yeah.
And another one that they just had where they in Nick Danger Third Eye, the femme fatale says, "Oh, Nick, you're such a tool." And I don't know that was really used in kind of as an insult before, but now 50s. Everybody uses that. And maybe also not because of the tool like a utensil, but the tool like a male item, but you know what I'm trying to say, it's just cool when you see something and you're like, is that the first time that was ever said? And then everybody goes, oh, that's a perfect phrase for this exact thing. Bucket list, it's a great phrase. Even like who kicked the bucket list, it's just kind of so cool that now there's no need to it's like, I don't know, that good phrase drove out all the lesser thans, and now everybody just uses that because it's perfect. Okay. Sorry, my wife is going to the dentist.
She's
giving me the goodbye wave. So
bye. So we mentioned Stephen King. We mentioned all the streaming and what's on. Starting tonight on CBS is the reboot of The Stand with Whoopi Goldberg and Skarsgård as Randall Flagg.
Skarsgård, okay.
And I am super interested because I love the old one with Gary Sinise and Rob Lowe and everybody. I think it was very well done. It's better than most of the King movies doing it over a 4-night miniseries. Great book, great. So I'm super excited to see how this new one turns out. Is it better? Is it worse? You know, what do I like and not like? Yeah. So that'll be something I'm going to sit down and watch probably this weekend.
Okay. I don't know much about that new version. I know that like when King released the unexpurgated version of The Stand, it didn't add like 3 scenes. It had like 120 pages. Remember,
yes.
It was even a thicker version of a book. And so I hope that it really seems to be that now Hollywood or whoever does these things, Netflix, is honoring him by saying, hey, we'd like you on a creative consultant, that it isn't we just want to buy your work and then shove off, but more like, let's, what were you really trying to get here? And that he has such a great sense of brooding danger and characterization and human fallibility. And here's hoping that if he's involved in it, that that's why it's so much better. You know what I mean? So
I would hope. And so it looks good. And one of the things I got for my birthday, we talked about some of the swag, was in the movie It, he was a cameo in the movie as a shopkeeper, and they made a Funko Pop of him as that shopkeeper. So
that's fun.
Yeah, I got that. That was one of the things, along with the other Star Wars and Spider-Man comic and all that.
Yeah. So in fact, sorry, go ahead, please.
No, you go ahead. In fact,
no. One of the things I like when they do make remakes like this is that not only you get kind of a new, you know, what does this new actor think of it? And you get their new portrayal, but they'll often, like, knowing that there's history, they'll have an homage character where, like, you know, when they redid Cape Fear, didn't like Robert Mitchum reappear
as a cameo somewhere?
It's a cameo somewhere, and they'll do that they'll actually do an updating where there's the first version is not they're not just updating it like Harrison Ford will still be Indiana Jones in
which he's going
Indiana
to be
the Jones movie coming. That's what I'm saying. But instead, they actually have it be that he would become the father.
Right.
In the Flash, they had that where characters from the old Flash series returned in the new Flash series as an alternate character, maybe even as the father. I'm trying to think, or as a scientist. I'm trying to think. So it's kind of cool that we have our own, not in a cannibalistic way, but in an homage way, we honor the things that have gone before in terms of those series and those books and stuff like that. That's
DC,
a cool thing. Easter egg type stuff.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
DC has been superb about that. I mean, Supergirl's mother was the actress that played in the Supergirl movie in the 80s.
There you
and
go.
See, her father cool. was, I forget the actor's name, but he was Superman from Lois and Clark. And they just, like you said, Flash's father was the old Flash in the 90s. And so they reuse a lot of these people. And I think that's great seeing them again. And when they did the Crisis on Infinite Earths, I think we talked a bit about that with all the crossovers, and Marv Wolfman did a cameo in it.
Exactly. So. The people that, and that's very cool. That it's not only the actors that portrayed things, but they find a way to say, thank you, George Perez and Marv Wolfman for doing the work in the first place. It's from your brain that this first all sprang, you know, that kind of stuff.
They need more of that in the world. Yeah. And speaking of all that, we mentioned on the Lost episode, all the things coming out, both with Star Wars and Marvel, and we listed a few of them. So I went and got the list of what they actually said at the Disney investor thing, which how exciting would it be to go sit at that thing, to be told the next 5 years, here's what you got to expect and what's coming out.
I hear you. And especially it's not only the things you know are coming, but when they reveal something that you didn't even know, oh my God, there's going to be another Blade movie?
Yes.
The whole Blade franchise, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That would be very exciting.
So here's what they have for Star Wars. Something called Children of Blood and Bone. I'm not even sure what that is because I hadn't even heard about that one. They have Visions coming out, which there was a comic book called Star Wars Visionaries, and these artists and writers got to write anything they wanted with Star Wars. It wasn't considered canon. It was just considered fantasy stories of Star Wars.
Okay.
So I'm hoping this is like an animated version of that. So that would be cool.
And if the ideas were good enough, I could see the Star Wars Meisters saying, you know, we got to find a way to crowbar that into canon because that's really a cool take on this situation, this world, this character, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So then Mandalorian, they already said season 3 and 4 with Boba Fett and some others.
Okay.
They have a Lando series coming out.
Interesting.
there's one called A Droid Story. I don't know if it's a movie or a TV show, but
okay.
They have Rogue Squadron, which I assume is based on Wedge's flight in Star Wars canon.
Okay.
And the Ahsoka show, which we knew about.
You talked about that, exactly, yeah.
And then they have Rangers of the New Republic, which sounds interesting. I'm not even sure.
So it's not only about Rebels, it's about, let's show it from multiple points of view, and that, you know, you guys are the terrorists in our view, you know.
Yep. Okay. And then they have a show coming out called Andor, and that's Cassian from Rogue One, with the K9 or KS2 robot. They have the Obi-Wan show with Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen.
Exactly.
Another one called...
So that's exciting. They're returning to those roles 20 years on or whatever like that. And okay.
I saw a little interview with both of them saying they're so excited to see each other again and act with each other again. And I think that's great. Cool. And I want to just strangle all the people. Oh, Hayden Christensen sucked and this and that and the other thing. Okay. He wasn't horrible. There have been worse. And I'd like to point out that everybody used to say the same thing about Hamill as Skywalker. But I would argue if you go watch that first movie, episode 4, and all this, everything everyone complains about with Skywalker, Luke, is Hamill acting as a whiny teenager. He's supposed to act that way. And arguably in that movie, he is a much better actor than Harrison Ford is at that time. So if you go watch it.
That's a great way to put it. Exactly.
So, you know, so there's that. Then there's this one called Acolyte that's coming, and it's set like 4,000 years before Star Wars in the Old Republic and, you know, totally separate. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a cartoon series called Bad Batch, and this is some of the clone troopers that break off and don't follow the Order 66 initiative. And then, as you mentioned, there's Indiana Jones coming out and a new Willow TV show.
Interesting.
And I wonder
if it's not going to be Val Kilmer and who is it?
Warwick Davis.
Warwick Davis, exactly.
But but like we were just saying, that would be awesome if they had little parts or cameos in it.
I agree.
That would be great.
And Joanne Whaley Kilmer, as a matter of fact, I don't think she's Kilmer anymore, right? I think they parted. He said being gossip boy, but you know, that's, honestly, we both Colleen and I really loved that movie. You know, I think it didn't stay long in theaters. It got a lot of buildup and then somehow disappointed and wasn't like that summer blockbuster, but it really holds up well. It's got incredible wit and good battle scenes and stuff like that. And I've always liked Val Kilmer. I think that he's amazing and mercurial. He really can inhabit various different characters, like in The Saint. It's really a tour de force for how he, like, is that really Val Kilmer under all that makeup? He's like, he's really lost in there. You really wouldn't know that was Kilmer in there.
Right.
So he's really got that ability to transform, kind of like Gary Oldman. You know what I mean? When he goes Gary character,
Oldman's
he just, he's not, he plays a different person, not just this guy with a different haircut. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. So.
And Kilmer was Iceman for Top Gun, which is a great part. And using that as a transition, did you hear the rant that Tom Cruise went on?
No. I read something about it and I didn't seek it out. Is it another couch jumping incident?
What you would think, isn't it? That's what I thought when Gina started to play it for me.
Okay.
But, and I know there could be arguments against this, but what happens, this is what I've heard and what it sounds like listening to the recording. You know, I wasn't there. So, but on set of the Mission Impossible 7 movie, there were some guys, you know, crew members not wearing their masks. And he lost his shit. He started yelling and saying he is tired of it. He has told everybody. He has warned everybody. He's like, look, there are people looking to shut every movie down and not do it because of things like this. If someone here gets COVID, we're all done. That puts everybody on this crew at risk. Yep. That puts everybody out of a job. People in our industry are losing their houses, losing their homes because movies are being shut down. Nobody is going to the theaters for movies. He's like, I am not putting up with it. You do it again, you are out. And people are like, oh, it's Tom Cruise ranting again. Oh, he thinks he's so big and he's important.
He's
stuff.
Saying all the right things.
Yeah. I got a lot more respect.
Rant.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Exactly. Now, yes, I could see the argument. Well, of course he's going to say that because if the movie comes out, he's going to make millions of dollars if it gets shut down. He doesn't need it though. And maybe he is egotistical and wants all that extra money, but it doesn't mean what he's saying is wrong.
That's right. And actually, I don't think it is the latter. I don't think that he is a prima donna. He really has, he has proven himself so many times. He has so much money. He doesn't need to be doing anything except not making good art and employing all the people that make that good art. You know what I mean? There's all, he's
thousands
the only,
of people.
Yeah. The any number of movie stars are aware that they're kind of an industry and that they, 500 people depend on them staying healthy and et cetera, et cetera. And then you see this clown not wearing a mask. And so it's not only about Tom Cruise's health, it's about everyone's health there and all the things that he said. So we need more rants of Tom Cruise level people of saying it really 9 months in, you know, I can name friends that have died. Yeah. How can people still call it a hoax?
So like, have we
can see the numbers. It's not 1, 2, 3. It's 300,000 people have died.
People are saying, well, people still die from the flu, but not this many and not throughout the summertime. That, you know, that what don't you get about this?
Yeah. The arguments that are being made by the nuts now are so transparently foolish that you're just like, wow, I've seen, you know, this quote on the net. Arguing this with you, it isn't worth my time because I'd have to give you like all of this education just to get to where you wouldn't say something as stupid as that.
Right.
You wouldn't say things about vaccines don't work. It's all a hoax. You know,
I
have to convince, we have to force people to do the right thing. And whether that's going to be an economic thing or a policed thing, who knows? But watch Walking Dead. You know what I mean? If you want to find out how different communities handle it, we've had all this training for the rogue element doesn't win. They put everybody at danger and you end up having to do difficult things to preserve the lives of everyone.
Yeah. Walking Dead, the comic book explored those things even better than the show. And the show did a great job. Yeah. One of the interesting things looking at that list, and we talked about this a little bit, was most of those are direct to streaming TV shows. They are spending time and countless amounts of money to bring shows to streaming services and not even taking them to the theaters. They've everybody, even the list here of the Marvel superhero stuff, they're discovering, hey, we can make a TV show, make 8 episodes and spend a little bit less than we would on a movie and actually make as much or more money and people enjoy it. And it has a longer tail. They're like,
that can be around forever. That can be, we can take our time doing all the exposition and character development because it doesn't have to be 2, 2.5 hours. It can be 8, you know what I mean? It can be 12, whatever else. I'll tell you, we in the Lost episode, we kind of talked about this. Khalid and I had gotten pretty much to the point of you go to the theater for a thing that requires the theater, the big overwhelm of sound and picture or a good laughing experience where you want the roar of the crowd and stuff like that. And other things, you just kind of want to be home in your PJs cuddling on the couch and stuff like that. Well, the fact that even Star Wars and Marvel are acknowledging if the theater model isn't going to always work, we have to make things that still work on the small screen, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or, you know, the various different Daredevil, Luke Cage, et cetera. They scaled things so that it doesn't have to be cosmic. It can still be really riveting entertainment and do
what you
can.
But arguably, I would say Mandalorian wasn't really scaled back. It is as good as any movie, just shorter.
I agree. And maybe that's it. Now it amazes me with what I just said about, I really love to go to the big theater for the big experience that I'll see people watching those movies on their phone, like this little postage stamp of a thing. You know what I mean? It's like you're watching that on an index card, and yet that's okay for them. They have a different expectation or a different acceptance.
A lot of times you ask, well, how was it? Yeah, it was okay. They don't get the experience. They don't immerse themselves in it and enjoy it as fully, which again argues, so who cares if we spent $300 million to make the movie? I can spend $10 million to make the TV show and they'll enjoy it just as much.
That could be. I'll tell you what you just, like the list you ran down of the proliferation of Star Wars material is amazing. You know, it used to be we waited 2-3 years between each movie, and I think you just named 10-12 things, and they're all going to be series or
2 or 3 years.
And just that, it I hope that they, you know, they often used to talk about you don't want to saturate because then you kind of wear out your welcome. You know, people are, well, I've seen enough of all the spinoffs of NCIS or whatever else it might be. Your CSI is even worst case, right? But right. In this case, we'll see. We'll see what the appetite that the public has for Star Wars. And it really might be that there aren't completists, that there's going to be people that, you know, out of all of Star Wars, what I really like was Rogue Squadron. Exactly, yeah. That. And that you'll start to get even sub-niching and stuff right. Like that, you know? And
so speaking of the list and speaking of overwhelm, we've had Marvel or Disney Marvel online or screens for 12 years. From okay. Iron Man to now, and we had Endgame, Infinity War, and Endgame. So it's almost they built the Marvel superhero movies up huge. They've had tons of them. Yeah. Are people getting overwhelmed and tired of it? Well, according to this list, they aren't.
Right.
So we talked about that. Here's the list. I grabbed the full list of everything coming. Some of it's still to be announced, but this is at least for the next 2 years. Into at least maybe three. So we have the WandaVision TV show. Mm-hmm. We have the Falcon and Winter Soldier TV show. We have the Black Widow movie. We have the Loki TV show.
Yeah.
We have the What If show.
I've heard very little about that one. And maybe that's what you said about the visionaries. You know what I mean? This is just the let somebody take this and run with it. And we don't have to worry about it being part of the official version. You know?
Yes.
So, okay.
Then we got Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Okay.
Movie, the Eternals movie, Ms. Marvel as a TV show, and Hawkeye as a TV show, and then Spider-Man 3 as a movie. That's just next year. That's as much as you would normally get in like 30 years ago.
Exactly.
And then we've
all
got
kinds of good stuff there, man. Oh. Like the Hawkeye is not only like Hawkeye Jeremy Ritter that we know, it's his female protege.
His daughter, I think.
It's not his daughter, but he maybe it is now in the movies. In the comic book, it is not. But you know what I mean?
Yes.
I love the fact that it isn't only tapping into things from the 60s and 70s, but that are using some of the most modern current takes on time books and still saying this would make a great movie, a great series.
And I did see something where they said that they were going to explore when he became Ronin and why he had a sword in Endgame. So we'll see.
Interesting. Okay.
So then in 22, we have Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Thor, Love and Thunder. That's one we talked about.
Right, exactly.
Black Panther 2 with Shuri. Okay. Captain Marvel.
With Chadwick Boseman having left,
yes.
There really was big shoes to fill and big wonderment as to what are they going to do.
Right.
But they had developed such an extensive royal family supporting cast and so forth, and that now they get to talk about the natural succession of things.
Yep.
You know, when are they going to do that with Miles Morales? Well, in Spider-Man, they already have done it in the animated version,
right.
You know, in the Spider-Verse.
That's very good.
Yeah, and it's very well done. So that's a cool thing when you have a mythology that's been around for 80 years, you know, 30s to now, let's say 90, that you start to have to worry about like All-Star Squad and stuff like that started to deal with generations of.
Right.
So what would the son and daughter of Our Man do? Hawkman,
right.
Whatever else it might be. That's kind of cool. Okay.
And Shuri taking over is not something new for the movies. For those
right.
that haven't read the comics, it
right.
did happen.
Right.
So then there's going to be not only Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which I heard Thor was going to still be traveling with them. We'll see.
Okay.
But next year, they are 2 years from now, they are doing a Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. So how cool is that?
That's amusing. Okay.
And then they have She-Hulk and Moon Knight, sorry, to round out 22.
Fantastic. So I have been a fan of Moon Knight forever.
So is Colin.
And often wondered, how would they bring that to screen? Because without being a jerk, he's a disturbed character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He really
hope they
has
keep
made
it.
The best of the fact that he's not mentally well and has done justice and is right as he can. But, and it's kind of interesting, even in the way that they've done this series, it hasn't been that you knew from the start and just saw it develop. There's been big left turns as to, okay, he's the spirit of vengeance. Khonshu is his, you know, he's the avatar for Khonshu, the god of vengeance and so forth. And then someone decided to say, you know, he's mentally not right. What if that was all his illusion of what was going on? And then they had another author that said, no, it actually is real. And that's just his way of dealing with the overly overwhelm of being a godly avatar. And so that's one of those characters that instead of being Biff Bam Pow, very straightforward. It's going to be wonderfully convoluted.
Yeah, I hope.
About, you know, he plays his own supporting characters. You know what I mean? Besides Jake Crawley and you know, Frenchie and the people that are really his assistants, he's got these multiple identities like the Shadow used to do, where if he's going to interact with the rough play in the city, he's got to like act that part, not go in his Moon Knight costume.
Right.
So,
wonderful. This is something you probably, again, wouldn't have heard 10, 20, 30 years ago, but it's going to be a TV show. So they are going to have that time to develop him and to make him and do what they need to with him. You know, a 2-hour movie, you wouldn't be able to get it. So it really does excite me to see TV shows now.
Yeah. And actually, if they do, you know, each season is a story arc, and that one of the cliffhangers or one of the big, you know, things that you like do at the end is when they say, what if this was all just like a fever dream? What if this, you know, that they introduce, I don't know, an arch villain that comes back to life, but maybe not. I just, they have real chances to do each series is really joltingly surprising instead of just being kind of a long story to tell, a river novel. You know what I mean? So we'll see, man. That's a cool one.
So to round it out, and these are to be announced. So probably 23, 24. We've got Secret Invasion, Ironheart.
Introducing the Skrulls and doing all the morphing and stuff like that. That'll be
so Miss Marvel will probably be involved.
Exactly.
Ironheart. So, and then Armor Wars. So we'll see what's going on with Iron Man without Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, so I think I read a little bit that they're going to have War Machine, and I think there might have been multiple people that have played him, but there's been two, and but like that thing of what happens when tech gets into the wrong hands is a very cool theme here in the world, and so that's an interesting series. Right. Okay,
I Am Groot. So
that had to be a spinoff, you know, of all the affectionate the public feels for characters in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
Groot is the one that got the little dancing Christmas tree, you know.
Oh my God, I love that. And then the one you talked about, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania
against then, Kang, which is like I said, the contrast between those being kind of like lighthearted, kind of goofy Paul Rudd villains against Kang, who is megalomaniac of all time. I'll wait to see
that. Could be good.
Yeah.
And then Fantastic Four and Blade. Okay. So you know, that's a lot.
I love the Fantastic Four, and depending on who's been writing it, it has had some of the best comics that have ever been written, but the movies have not.
They
really lost their way in terms of portraying what it's all about family, about what if you really had the brightest guy in the world, but he's always driven to explore. What if you have the fiery hothead, that the whole dynamic of, and I don't know, they've created so many other characters in the Marvel universe that then went into other things. You know, Galactus was first there, you know, Black Panther was first there, that kind of thing. So I hope that it isn't just another retelling of their origin, but that again, they throw you in like issue 70 and then just have little flashbacks to here's how the thing has been disaffected. You know, he's a nice guy, but he's had to be this rocky, untouchable self for a long time. And the pangs of that, you know, that, anyway,
so the first movie in the 2000s, I thought wasn't too bad. It felt like a comic book with Dr. Doom. It wasn't the best, but it felt comic booky, at least for the time. And the one with Silver Surfer was not maybe quite as good, but still it was comic booky. It was okay. Mm-hmm. The one they made 5-6 years ago, they totally went off the rails. It's like somebody said, hey, I heard about this Fantastic Four team. I got a great idea to totally change everything about it. You know, but with it coming in like 2023 and they have all this stuff before it, if they're smart, they're going to pepper some of these characters into those other movies and TV shows.
That's some part of what I'm looking forward to is, you know, the big thing they did with the Marvel Universe was showing how it all ties together. Every time that you stuck around to the theater for that little ending segment, and it was Nick Fury collecting his various different Avengers to become this force that had to fight off a galactic level menace and all that kind of stuff. What are they going to do? Now it's not Thanos. We are beyond Thanos. We're beyond Ultron. There still are all kinds of other things. So if you're going to bring the mystic component, is it going to be that we have to battle Dormammu? Do we have to battle Shuma-Gorath? You know what I mean?
We're going into the different multiverse with Doctor Strange and then Quantumania.
Quantumania, exactly. So. And so maybe it'll be, and like, it's kind of funny. Psycho Man is not a great villain, but just that the fact that they've expanded from Earth to be Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor and everything else. I mean, that's another one of the wonderful things about the comic books was that they really did embrace, if you're going to have Thor that really starts going to multiple realms and multiple, you know, planets and stuff like that, then how about Ego, the living planet? How
right.
about, you know,
well, that was already the, in Guardians.
It's right. Well, but in the comic books, that's where Ego comes from, is in Thor. You know what I mean?
Got
so
it.
It it's kind of funny. I often do that. I don't necessarily stick to the movies. I have all that kind of background and lore.
Right.
And so that's when I really admire that, like, you know, Warlock, who was originally one of the founders of the Infinity Watch that had the Infinity Gauntlet that Thanos took and all that kind of stuff. I just, when I was going through the vaults and going through my old Thors, I saw the first appearance of him from Fantastic Four. And then he reappears as this, you know, enhanced human being, this perfected human being in Thor. And it just, Marvel was very good always back then about having there be kind of crossovers and reappearances. And what would right. it be like if it wasn't only a street fight, but it was actually this guy powered up, the Wrecker, you know, that used to just be a tough guy. Now he has the Odin power, you know, the power of Mjolnir and his crowbar. And it's, they did really good things of almost like on an improv level of take this existing system and say, heighten it and add to it and take a left turn with it. And so I'm hoping that we'll see some of that in the movies, that part yeah. of what they're going to do is not just continue what we already know, but I don't know, when you do a big change, like there's going to be a female Thor, you know what I mean? Jane Foster is going to become the Worthy.
Right.
That's, there's all kinds of cool stuff that happened in the comic books because of that. And,
yeah.
And again, that's kind of funny. I don't know what's a spoiler versus a teaser, but one of the reasons that she has to take it on is because without the Thor power, she's not going to be around. She's
right.
got a deadly disease.
What so, I find,
wow, they up the ante, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing I find with that is Natalie Portman said she hated working on Thor. She should have never agreed to it. That's why she didn't want to do Infinity War and Endgame, and they had to use some old footage, and she's denounced it like it was some of the worst things she's ever done. Oh, and now boy. Suddenly
I didn't know that.
Huh, I haven't okay. seen her in too much recently, and now she's like, yeah, I'd love to play Lady Thor. That'd be great. Well, not as popular as you thought is what I'm taking it as.
So I wonder, there's a couple things. They really are doing, in comic books at least, all kinds of expansion of lady heroes being treated like lady heroes, not just sidekicks, not just right. know, a female equivalent that happens to wear a metal bikini instead of armor or whatever else it might be. So maybe she's seeing that there's more respect and more female writers and directors involved, and that she wants to be, if you will, part of that movement. Could be that the stories that she was being featured in still had her as just Jane Foster, and now she actually gets to like play the
could
lead
be,
and
that could be,
you know, and it could be that they backed a dump truck of money up to her house like they say yeah. on The Simpsons, and she right. just said, wow, if I do this, my kids go to college, I get to own an island, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's really hard to say, if they really want to pay me that kind of money, I might put aside some of my artistic differences and I'll do the best with this that I can. Michael Caine has had an incredible career by taking on pretty much any role offered him.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and been the best thing in the movie doing that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, and he's coming back as Vulture with Spider-Man.
I didn't know that.
Well, it was teased.
He's Tombs. Oh my God.
They are... well, he was in the last movie. Did you see Spider-Man 2? He was, or one, which one was it? He was, okay. So
three is Far From Home, right?
That's no, that was two.
I'm sorry.
So the third one's okay. still coming.
Okay. So, yes, you're right. Okay.
So after the Avengers, the first movie, and they destroyed New York,
right.
Michael Keaton's character is on the cleanup crew. And,
oh, I'm sorry. I said Michael Caine. We're talking Michael
Caine. Oh, Michael Caine. I'm sorry.
No, I hear what you're saying. He really yes. was good as the Vulture. Absolutely. He was like
different.
Very menacing, perfectly
yes.
menacing.
Yes.
Over like, I'm the adult and you're a kid, and don't lose fact that I'm not only an adult, I'm a criminal mastermind. Right. You know what I mean?
He right,
was
right.
Awfully menacing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. Got on the right okay. one. Okay. All right. Well, hey, I need to cut this off. I need to get going here. So.
Got it. Thank you. I'm really sorry about whatever happened. I think that we've, so now that we've recorded this. So
I got it.
Okay. Very good. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And happy
Christmas
holidays
week.
And happy birthday and all that kind
Thank
of
you.
Stuff. All right.
All right,
Take
man.
Care, Stephen.
Talk to okay. you later.
You bet. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Relentless Geekery Podcast. Come back next week and join Alan and Steven's conversation on geek topics of the week.